Attention on Disability Issues of Tucson. This is our November 19th, 2025 meeting, and I'm calling this one to order at 3:38 p.m. Renee, are you able to take roll call, please?
Yes. Correct me if I'm saying the names wrong. Sue Kroger?
Here.
Craig, okay, thank you. Derek Espadas? Zach Coble?
Here.
Ray Jordan? Absent. Lily Bogan?
Here.
Thank you. Wesley Derbyshire?
Here.
Kate Elliott?
Here.
And Jonathan Lee Confer?
Here.
All right, thank you. And yeah, we have a quorum.
Okay. I don't know if it makes a difference, Renee. Ray, Commissioner Jordan did let me know he would be absent. So in the case of, like, if this is an excused absence, like, I emailed Stephanie and Brandy to let them know as well. So,
okay. I can definitely note it here for the BCC admin and the staff and just kind of let them know that you were made aware prior to the start of the meeting.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Okay. So our first order of business is a call to the public. This is for any members of the public who have disability concerns or issues they would like to raise to the commission within the city. We're happy to, you know, hear what you have and then, you know, consider it possibly for a future agenda item. I don't know if I see, well, I don't know everyone that's involved, so I see some names I don't know, so. If you would like to, you know, voice your opinion, please take yourself off mute, raise your virtual hand, indicate I'll be silent for a moment. Okie dokie. Not seeing or hearing anyone announce themselves, like, I'm going to move on to agenda item number 3. This is consideration and possible approval for our October 2025 meeting minutes. Did commissioners have a chance to look over those minutes? Okay, seeing some nodding. Did commissioners have any corrections, additions, changes that need to be made? If so, take yourselves off mute and we can talk about it. It kind of heard something, but I didn't hear anything, so I don't know if it was background noise. If we don't have any changes, additions, or edits to make, I would be looking for a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Commissioner Derbyshire.
I second.
Thanks, Sue. I didn't get the words out, but thank you for the second. Okay, so we have a motion on the floor and a second. Renee, would you take roll call on that motion, please?
Yeah, sure. Sue Kroger?
Yes.
Zach Coble?
Aye.
Lily Bogan?
Sorry, I was mute. Yes.
No, you're fine. Wesley Derbyshire?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
And Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
Okay, passes 5-0.
Okie dokie. So the next part of our agenda is agenda item number 4, and that's presentation and discussion on creating accessible paths during road construction. And I believe that is where our guests come in. Hi, Jen. And
hi, everybody.
Rob and whoever else is on. So take it away.
Yeah, so thank you. I will. I appreciate the opportunity for us to be able to share this information. I am Deputy Director here at Department of Transportation and Mobility. Again, my name is Jen Toothaker. I've been here at the city for about 25 years, and my background is in planning. I've worked in various arms of the city in different planner roles, and in the last, 14 years now at Department of Transportation. I thought what we might be able to do is provide just a very high-level overview when we talk about permits, which kind of relates to some of the conversation we've had to date, that I do just a high-level primer and give you a little bit of information about our right-of-way permitting process and how that then ties into what Rob Lane, our project manager for the Grant Road Phases 3 and 4 project, which is now under construction, allow him to present information from his world and give you some insights and lead to some great conversation, I hope. I do want to call out really quickly that we have Lydia Barker on the meeting today, who is helping us this year. She is one of our transportation planners. And Lydia, I don't know if you want to just quickly introduce yourself and also then Gloria Salmon.
Yeah, I'll say hi really quick. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. My name is Lydia Barker. I've been with the city for about 2 years and was brought on full-time as a planner last October. So excited to learn more about what this commission does and yeah, how I can work with you all. Thanks.
And I'll just say that Lydia is also helping this year with that ADA annual report that I was able to share out with you all in March of this year. She's going to help with pulling it together this year on our end. So we'll probably have her help present out when that is approved by ADOT and ready for presentation. Gloria, please say hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Gloria Salmon. I am a Department of Transportation and Mobility employee. I am a management coordinator and oversee the permits and codes section. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Last but not least, we also have Stephanie Ramirez on, who is joining the conversation with us from Sunban perspective. I think Will Heath may join us later, but if we don't have ability to answer all the transit questions related to the sort of construction process, we certainly can bring back information. So without further ado, let's get going. I don't know, Rob, if you want to share your screen or if you want me to share on my end. I'm totally open.
Oh, I'll do it.
Oh, brilliant. I'll make it. Perfect. So, all right. On the second slide, I have just a, couple of super simple distinctions. So again, high level permits overview. There are kind of two that I'll just really talk about today. There's building permits, which we've talked about before, and that is really for private land. So a building permit focuses on the safety and structural integrity of a structure on private land. And then right-of-way permits focus on public safety and appropriate use of public land and infrastructure. Right-of-way, we'll look at a diagram here in a quick second, but right-of-way permits are often used when we're doing, like, construction. A building permit may require a right-of-way permit when it comes time to construct. They're not so separate and distinct that they don't have any overlap. You typically will have some type of a right-of-way permit that's given on a building permit. Public right-of-way, there's this image on the screen that's kind of just showing you. We talk about public rights-of-way as from, like, property line to property line, and so everything that's kind of in between that is our sidewalks, driveways, curbs, street, landscaping and signage and storm drains. all of that surface level that you might encounter is, you know, typically what we refer to in public right of way. And then what often we don't think about is all the infrastructure underneath. And oftentimes the construction that's happening is because of all that stuff underneath. And that's when people are trying to put in water mains or address the sewer, you know, and electrical, putting in utilities or checking on the utilities. And then there's the times when the city itself is doing work. And so we have construction zones while we're doing work on that. And then we can go to the next slide if you want. The different guidances that are used between managing the right-of-way. So the top row of images on this slide show that we have Tucson City Code. We have transportation standards and details and specifications, very specific things. There's a national manual on uniform traffic control devices for streets and highways called MUTCD for short. You'll often hear that term. City of Tucson has adopted additions, so we've made some tailoring to the MUTCD for how we want things handled in our rights of way. And the most current version that's available was adopted in 2015. There were some that were, I believe, potentially going to be added in 2018, but that amendment did not occur. That's probably something we'll correct in near-term future. And then there's a public utility administrative manual, which is on the bottom row of images you see. These are all kind of like the cover pages or access to these different guidances. Public utility administrative manual, MUTCD. These are all things that are really specific about how the right-of-way should be managed. And Gloria Salmeron and her team make sure that the right-of-way permitting process adheres to these guidances. There's some additional images here that relate to other things that inform what we allow in the right-of-way. City of Tucson adopted a complete streets policy and a street design guide. That is a policy that was adopted by Mayor and Council in 2021 and does influence infrastructure design and construction. Also, AASHTO, American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, I think is what it stands for. And they developed, they've had a policy on the books on geometric design of highways and streets. It's kind of the go-to for all engineering on streets. There's additional guidances as well, but this is one that's probably referenced the most. And then also U.S. Access Board has created public right-of-way accessibility guidelines, or PROAG for short. And so all of these things kind of play into the decisions we're making on how we construct the road, how we manage our right-of-way permitting process, how we manage our traffic control planning for those construction zones. Next slide, please. I'll just tick through a few of these and then we'll get right to our stellar presentation by Rob. So we can advance one more slide. This is a right-of-way permits review process. So the important thing to note here is just we have an application intake and we review that application for work to be done in the right-of-way. Engineering section reviews for a variety of different things, including the traffic control plan. There's professional review, so every one of those intakes goes out to a group of people to review. That includes landscape architecture, traffic engineering, SunLink track access management, SunTran, archaeological, project managers, storm to shade, electric maintenance. So there's a whole group of people that look at these. And then after all of those reviews and once things are addressed, if there is any issues, a right-of-way permit is issued. All the way through that review, any conditions that need to be placed on that permit, so things that people will need to do when they're under construction and using that right-of-way permit, those are noted on the final document that's given to them, the right-of-way permit. We can go to the next page. These are just a couple quick examples, an image here showing a really good example of how to redirect pedestrian pathway when the sidewalk is closed and can't be used. It's very clearly demarked so that someone can get into a pathway that is protected from vehicles around it. This is in the downtown area. And this is following that Public Utility Administrative Manual, the ADA impacts and planning. So this is a whole paragraph on prioritizing the ADA access during construction and using their traffic control plan. Next slide, please. There is another type of activity that happens. So emergency restoration, this is an example of an emergency restoration. And in this is a different type of process. They don't go through a review process because that review process takes a while. If it's an emergency repair, they go in immediately. And this might be something typical that you would run into, caution tape, preventing access into an active work zone area, but not necessarily what we are talking about today. Although always when we're looking to block off any access, it would be great if more and more people are able to think about all the users when they're blocking these areas off so there is better access. Next slide. And this is just an example of the conditions on a permit. So pedestrian access and sidewalk, when they get that permit and they're allowed to move forward, these are what they would need to adhere to. Pedestrian access must be provided and maintained per MUTCD Chapter 6D. Field adjustments may be required. Replace repair sidewalk panels per PAG standard. So this might have been specific to repair work. Pedestrian detour route on same side of right-of-way to be provided per city code and policy. And then it gives specific references to the guidances that direct on pedestrian access and sidewalk. I'll stop here. Quick, again, overview of just right-of-way permitting and that process. I'll just say this, that we have our standard permit intake is for basically everybody except ourselves. City of Tucson and Rob, as a project manager, will do a similar process, but it's internal. And there's some different things that we've done to try to help with some streamlining of process on that end. So, Rob, hopefully I helped to open this up for you and take it away. Your turn.
Thank you very much, Jen. I'm not going to turn my video on because the screen that I'm using to do the slides is to the side, so I don't think you want to see my profile the whole time just looking at a slide, if that's okay with everyone.
No problem at all. Understood.
Okay. So we're going to discuss the – and if my sound is too soft, please let me know. We're going to talk about pedestrian access and ADA accessibility in the construction zones. As Jen said, my name is Rob Lane. I am the current project manager for Grant 3-4, which is under construction. I'm also the project manager for Grant 5-6, which is in design. I started in February as a contractor for the city, as a project manager, handling these projects and as I came in and the other project manager left, we started encountering more and more, I guess you could say, full-on issues. A lot of the work that had been done before I got on board was utility work. So there wasn't as much, I won't say that. There was impact, but it was a little easier to address those impacts. As Jen said, the city's MUTCD supplement from 2015 has a specific section regarding guidelines of placement of traffic control devices on pedestrian pathways. This is a policy. It is also straight out of the MUTCD. The MUTCD has strict you shall do, and then they also have guidelines that says this is what you should do, this is what you should try to do, this is the reason why you should try to do this. It's a little more open. So when you do a supplement like this, this is one of the ways that you can try to make the language more specific on how you want things handled. I want to highlight kind of two things. A lot of times in these concrete wall, a lot of times they use water barrier here, like Jen had in the other picture, and then a separation of the work zone itself. These ramps, I found out, are available for use, and we're going to start using those a lot more. And you'll understand why as I go to this next slide. This is the same picture that then Jen used, because it happened to make a very good point of this looks good, and then you get to this. So if you have something that doesn't provide access over the full portion of an area, you are not providing access. Unfortunately, this forces someone with mobility issues or in a wheelchair to then go down over to the driveway where you can hopefully get on, which is not at all what we want and does not obviously help anybody and is not accessible. So that was a note immediately.
So Rob, ahead. just to clarify, because of sure. The visual description of the, so the first kind of picture is like a nice little pathway for pedestrians that is like accessible, that doesn't look like it has, that is blocked off from construction. And then the second picture, when you get to the end of a construction zone and you have to get back on sidewalk, there's a ramp going up, but then there's like rock in between the ramp and the sidewalk. So just for our commissioners that may need that visual description, I just wanted to kind of clarify what was being talked about.
I do appreciate that. Unfortunately, most of my pictures are pictures, or I should say most of my presentation is pictures. So I will try to describe that better. Thank you, Zach.
No problem.
And that gap where the rocks are is called a curbway. On the left side of this screen is the verbiage straight out of what we call the special provisions. Special provisions and specifications are what we use to describe how the work should be done. The plans are a visual representation, for the contractor to have a good idea of what, where things need to be done. The specifications tell them exactly how, we expect them to be done. Specifications are standard. There's a whole book that we use here, and it used to be separate for public works between the county and the city, and then PAG took it over and has a standard for all of Pima County to utilize. And on the left side, the under proposed work, it discusses the work, but then it has a specific thing that says, driver and pedestrian access shall be maintained during the construction of improvements. Temporary paved pedestrian access shall be provided at all times that meets ADA requirements. And they're advised, the contractors advise that an approved construction sequencing scheme meeting the intent of the project objectives shall be followed. They make a construction sequence, they make a schedule, and then things happen and the schedule starts moving around a little bit and they end up doing things out of sequence, which does not help them when they've erased a walkway on one side of the road, and then they also expect people to be able to use that side of the road when they switch to the other side. That's something we try to avoid as much as possible. On the right hand of the screen here, these are straight out of the MUTCD. There's a whole section on temporary traffic control, how you need to block or how you need to provide access, how you need to block traffic to provide access. The left hand is called typical application 28. It shows where a work zone would be in between a block. So two crosswalks, two ramps, directing people that they need to move. They need to cross the street to get around because the sidewalk is closed. Also part of application 28 is where it shows kind of, that same, thing that Zach was talking about where there's like where they step you off or they ramp you down onto the street. They close portion of the street and then, are supposed to put you back onto the sidewalk. On the right hand is called, is typical application 29, where they've closed a portion of the sidewalk and the corner and then another portion as you go around the block. So, this takes a lot more signage. It also, there's a lot more signage and you need, you know, warning ahead of time to really let people know, where they can go and a lot of times they try to get a duration in there too. And I say that these are the two main typical applications when they talk about ADA or, pedestrian access, how to provide pedestrian access. And these are great and these are very specific. And then you get into, the next slide, which is a aerial view of Grant Road, the whole Grant Road project. The overall length is 1.72 miles. The west side of the project, which is west of Alvernon, is about 0.8, and the east side is about 0.9. And there's 16 bus stops, both pull out and curb stops at the curb. So you start looking at the difference between what they showed in the MUTCD. I'm going to skip back to it, which are nice little closures, little work zones, and then you get into something like Grant or even 5th, 6th that they're working on as well, where it is a massive project and even just the phase, like they've worked on in Grant, where they did the south side west of Alvernon. Again, that's well over a half a mile. You're doing all of the work, trying to get it all at once to basically get the economy of scale. That's how they do construction when they build a road, when they need to dig everything out. They get the underground utilities done first, and then they go in and they start working on the curb. They start grading for the roadway, and you have this long, much more complex construction zone. When you start doing and providing areas, walkways, it's very easy to overlook, and they do it constantly. And the image on the screen is two shots of the same area. One is where they cut off the sidewalk. And then they have a paved temporary walkway, right next to it without a connection between the sidewalk that they cut off and the paved temporary point. I had gone around at this intersection. This is Alvernon. This is on the east side, north of Grant. I had gone around the intersection at other areas where they had the same issue and told them they need to fix all of them. My assumption was that they would go through and see all of them there, and I wouldn't have to, you know, spell out and point out each one, but I did, because when I went out, I talked to somebody. They were very upset when I mentioned that they could use the east side of Alvernon as an access. The gentleman, very rightly so, kind of cussed me out and told me that I didn't know what I was talking about. And when I went out and looked, I understood his anger, and I called him up and let him know once it was paved that there was now access there. And it's always the intention of having things done. But if we don't communicate them and we don't spell it out and we don't constantly remind people that, access isn't just for that access is for everybody. And you, when you do things like this, you are removing access for a big portion of the population. Another call I had taken, was, from a woman describing, I didn't spell that out as clearly on the last one. The image on the screen now in the upper left corner is a typical old driveway layout for sidewalk with a driveway, where the driveway, you would be walking along the sidewalk, and all of a sudden the cross slope of the sidewalk would change drastically where the driveway is to give access to cars to their property. But the sidewalk is incorporated with it, so the cross slope would also change drastically. Sometimes the standard cross slope on a sidewalk is no more than 2%. And in this image, that cross slope is probably more like 8 to 10%. So drastic cross slope. She indicated to me that she was in a wheelchair, and she'd had multiple occasions where it's a balancing act to keep yourself from falling over, and that she had fallen over before. So this, the reason why I'm pointing this out is this is an older style. When the ADA first came out in 91, I believe it was 1991, when they really started looking at the access board and architectural board, they came up with a lot of standards. They did some things and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. And over time, or probably very quickly in some areas, they figured out that these were not accessible items, and that the standards needed to change. So in the bottom left screen, part of the screen, is an image of a sidewalk at a driveway where the driveway is flattened. The driveway slope itself is flattened to meet ADA, and the sidewalk instead ramps down to that point. And in the upper right corner of this image is kind of two different versions of that. One of them is where the front part, or the part along the curb right in here, would be sloped, and this back portion, this part would be sloped. That's this portion here, and the back portion would be at the 2%. Same with this. It just pushes it back when it needs to be a little bit deeper, or if there's a little bit higher difference in elevation. And this is kind of there's a shot side view on the lower right that indicates that you're meeting the ADA and the max percentages for the sidewalk at a driveway. So one of the big issues was after they finished the south side and had Granite, that's the contractor, they had a brand new sidewalk, but we couldn't get people from Dodge on the north side of Grant to the south side very easily. And the upper left corner of this image is the original, what it looked like before construction ever started at Dodge and Grant on the north side of Grant. There are portions that had a paved shoulder. Most of it was unpaved. And as you approached Dodge, There was a dirt area. There was a parking lot that you had to cross. Not really accessible. Some people, I guess you could say muddled through and had still had issues, but were somewhat able to access. If they went across, and there's a green arrow that kind of shows them going across the parking lot. A lot of people, that's how they accessed. I was told that's how they accessed the actual sidewalk that was on the north side of Grant. On the lower right corner of this slide is an image. Once they started doing the construction and they took all of that out, the building is gone. People were still accessing. And once they started removing that and they removed the sidewalk on the north side of Grant, they lost the ability to cross the street or to cross the construction zone and get to the sidewalk that was on the other side. One of the special provisions and also in the MUTCD, it says that as long as you're providing it on one side and you're providing the ability to cross, you could consider that an accessible route. Well, the problem was is it was all dirt and it had been torn up. When you have a dirt area that's been rained on for years and driven over, it can be hard like concrete. It's not great, but people do cross it. When you go in with the equipment and you start tearing that area up because you're going to be installing things into the ground, the ground is much softer. The kind of blue arrows show. I used some blue arrows to kind of show how people were trying to get around and access. This pathway that was kind of bladed out and material was put down. It's called millings. It's just the asphalt that's been ground up, and then they can put it back down, and it gets really hard, but it is not pavement. So this was their initial fix for it and said, no, that's not good enough. We need to do better than that. So, I kind of came up with a plan and this plan says, you know, we'd still use the same general pathway, understanding that once they get past the barricades on the north side, they are accessing however they're accessing, if they're in the road, or if they're using the shoulder. But from that point on, we would provide, there would be a temporary pavement. When they got close to the area where the construction was happening, and I'll show another picture here shortly, there would be kind of that same water barrier where they needed to cross the active work zone. And remember that this is across a long point, you know, like almost 0.8 mile roadway or construction area. I have some additional pictures, again, looking up north, looking up Dodge, north on Dodge. Granite was not the only one doing work, they were doing work on Grant. There was another contractor doing work on Dodge itself where they were doing neighborhood paving. So they were milling and paving that area, which, understandably probably affected any accessibility that people had, before that point. And then on the lower right picture is as they started grading, what I really wanted to point out was that there is now a drop, a vertical drop of 8 to 10 inches. And as they started grading that area out, we started realizing that every time they needed to go through and grade and either take the existing soils out or put something down, they were going to have a vertical barrier. And how do you keep changing a vertical barrier? How do you keep changing to provide access across it? And the contractor, we came up with multiple. There's ramps. You know, you could have paving an area, but how do they do that at the beginning of the day and then change it every hour? And that became a big issue that they were trying to solve, and how trying to figure out how they would provide that. Again, you can see here in the, another couple of pictures is the upper picture again shows that, that drop, and kind of the same area following my mouth of where people were going. You can see here that there's still pavement on the ground. That was then taken out, which then created a larger barrier. As they put the curb in, that was another barrier. And it really became problematic on how you provide access across a longitudinal construction zone where the whole purpose is to dig out and then put back material in that change. Their solution on that was at this point to try to close it all off completely, and have people access the network, not crossing Grant, but in actually going back in using their neighborhood and getting to Flower, and then taking Flower over to Alvernon, where there is a Hawk signal, that could enable people and was built ADA to get people across Alvernon. As I talked about that, I see you shaking your head, Wesley, and I understand. That was also the time that I told the gentleman that he could just use that east side and, you know, problem solved. And he cussed me out and then explained why that wasn't an alternative for him. And I understand that as soon as you start, pushing people out of their, not just out of their comfort zone, but out of the way, and you're making things longer. And as was explained, that gentleman knew what his energy level was, and he knew what he was capable of and could do easily. And being told he needed to make his trip further, was not what he wanted to hear, and makes it difficult. And I do understand that. And we are still talking about how you cross a longitudinal construction zone. As you're changing things minute by minute, hour by hour. And there's, again, still a lot of conversation going on, and how do you make that, how do you do the construction and still provide access everywhere? And a lot of the discussions now are starting to happen is you provide an access on the outside, you get more TCE, you get more of a temporary construction easement, and you build the access on the outside edges so that you don't necessarily have to cross, or if you're going to cross, it is a bridged area that they go in either with a wood ramp or some kind of ramp where you are constantly moving it, not down the road like a half mile, but, you know, just maybe within 100 feet or 50 feet, so that they are able to get the work done and still provide access. And that's where you start getting into the discussion of schedule, and everybody lets me know all the time, that it's already taking too long to do this project on Grant Road. But I think part of that is going to have to be the discussion of not only is it going to take as long as it's going to take, but it may need to take longer because we have to provide access, and we can't easily provide access. Nobody has a teleportation device yet. I don't know if anybody's working on one, but that is the only way you're going to get, instant transportation, without having to cross something. And I say that pun like fully acknowledging, trying to acknowledge and trying to inject some humor. It's just a super complex thing to do.
Right. Hi, Rob. I appreciate your super detailed, presentation and discussion of the issues. I'm wondering if we can kind of move on to like some question time, just because our meeting, unfortunately, got started a little bit late, due to, the unforeseen issues. Yeah. If I can just open it up to questions from the commission, commissioners, if you have questions, I'll let you go first. And then, if there's time, I may have a couple, but, The floor is yours, so please raise your virtual hand or, Wesley?
So thank you very much for the presentation so far. Of course, for people to go out of their way is definitely a problem. Absolutely, I recognize that. I appreciated the photo of the downtown barricades. I wanted to point out that in some of the photos that were presented there, I have limited vision, so I can see some of the stuff you do. I blow it up on the screen, but I'm effectively blind, and I always have to consider people who are wholly blind. And I even wonder about the that site downtown, whether or not a wholly blind person could actually navigate those barricades properly, because even at the beginning, it doesn't really suffice to get you into that track as it's pushing you off the sidewalk. So that's just an example of an issue that I would see, as to how those things are done. Now, I want to state the following, and I don't really have and then we'll lead to my question. And in the past, in my neighborhood, when they did construction out here at Broadway and Houghton, they did not have any of those barricades. They had to walk me across the dirt and stuff like that. My question now is, are all future projects, regardless of where they're located in the city of Tucson, will they have those barricades that are mandated by federal law so that there will be safety for pedestrians? And will they in fact have what you've been talking about, which is the surface for, you know, the wheelchairs to access? Will they have those? That's my first question.
I'll answer that because I don't think that Rob can make that decision unilaterally for the department. And I would say that we are working on this to figure out what is the expectation that we clearly delineate, pardon me, as Rob showed in the specifications which go with the contract. We do list our expectations. However, that was an example of what preceded the stuff Rob walked into on this project and the things that we've been working to correct. Simple answer, we're going to work to make it a lot better. And I can't say today that it will be doing exactly the barricades. I think we need to define what the expectations are in a construction zone so that they are able to be flexible, like all the different conditions that Rob was showing you, that were requiring that they build the access such that it can work with their construction process. I'm hearing myself, and I feel like that doesn't seem strong enough, and I apologize for that, but we're not at a point where we can tell you, yes, we're going to do this. But I'm trying really hard for us to get there. And Rob has been amazing behind the scenes. This Monday, he just hosted a training session for all the project managers highlighting these things and raising the awareness. We're getting into the space where we're actively fact-finding. We're trying to learn about this better so we can do better. Let me come back to you with more.
Okay. My second question is, because I'm vision impaired and I always think about the blind community, I'm always concerned about the ramps and the little dots on the ramps and whether or not they properly guide the person using the white cane in the direction that they're supposed to go. And I have noticed that in many cases they are incorrectly across the city. And I'm wondering, what is the expertise to verify that these are installed correctly and actually placing the person in line with walking across the crosswalk? And that's my final question. Thank you.
There's additional products. We had a supplier come out and kind of show the expertise that you asked about is basically the inspector looking at it and saying this doesn't match what the design shows, fully acknowledging that if the designer didn't get it right and then the the reviewer didn't get it right, it might be a problem, or it will be a problem. Sorry. The other aspect is these new pads that they have, or the new they still use the truncated domes, but they all now also have like where they're linear, where it's like a line where it indicates, and you can kind of, you can follow it, and they've shown that people with canes can follow them. And there's also apparently one that's acts more like a barricade. It's just taller. But it indicates that that is not a place that you should cross, that there's another area. And I would, I can send out some of those details, but that's where they're getting nationwide is really looking at providing better indicators to people with visual impairment issues, or just in general, how you guide people through some of these new signals, new kind of in traffic improvements that are supposed to make everything better. But are still kind of, I don't want to say they're experimental, but people are learning, hey, this doesn't provide visually impaired people with any indication of where they're supposed to go. One of the things with the new MUTCD that Jen had put up, before there was like soft guidance on using auditory indicators, where it's like a little speaker that is constantly sending the message, hey, you know, be careful, there's something up ahead, you need to shift to the left, or you need to do those. And when you start asking traffic barricade companies who we depend on, hey, do you have any of those in stock? And they're like, well, no, nobody's asked for them. Okay, to Jennifer's point. Okay, now we need to be much more firm about, you will have these available. When we specify traffic control, we have a list of everything that's in there. That's something that needs to go on the list, is you need to provide auditory control, auditory directions, basically, to indicate to the visually impaired that there is a situation coming up. And again, those are changes that are occurring nationally, as well as, you know, then we get the order and we go in for it. I saw that. Jonathan had a...
Yes. Jonathan, go ahead.
Hey, thank you for the presentation. I'm looking at slide 8 and slide 12, where it says, like, conditions on the permit for pedestrian access and sidewalks, and then slide 12 has, like, the MUTCD, like, guidelines of how to do these accessible routes. But my question is... are the accessible routes and their designs planned and given to you guys for review before the permits are issued? Or are the permits reviewed, issued, and then be like, hey, don't forget the pedestrian accessible routes? So I guess I'm asking, are they the accessible route plans proactive or reactive?
I know this is Gloria's area, but it's a little bit of both. It's supposed to show it on the traffic control plan. I was provided a traffic control plan for grant. This is not something that Gloria would review because the construction is already occurring, and I am now responsible for those traffic control plans within the area. And I immediately told them, you don't have any indication of what's happening with the pedestrians. These plans are, you're supposed to be giving me pedestrian control plans. That's what I asked for. And it showed a top view. Basically, it was the whole route, just kind of indicating an area where there was going to be pedestrians. And I said, you need much more detail. They need to comply with the MUTCD. You need to look at these specific areas and these specific, not just these typical applications, but, you know, actual, sections which tell you how you're supposed to do it and what you're supposed to do there. And it needs to conform with that. And they were used to like an overall general plan. And I said, this is not overall general anymore. This is specific areas. How are you going to treat these areas? Which I know is probably not great for my reputation with them, but I don't really care. It's something that we have to do to make sure that the MUTCD is being followed. And I don't want to make it sound like they weren't trying to do it. I just think they were kind of, hey, he just asked for a little plan. We'll give him a little plan. And I didn't want a little plan. I wanted a big plan. I wanted something that showed detail. So I know that's part of it. The other project that I worked on, Gloria reviewed, Gloria's staff reviewed, and they caught a lot of stuff that was missing and corrected them before it was approved.
I'll just follow up on that. Yes, as part of the permit process, they are required to provide us a traffic control plan that's reviewed by our engineering review staff. And they will require resubmit if it doesn't meet their criteria of providing pedestrian access. As Rob said, you know, there are some challenges. If there's a request within an active capital project, then we will send those to the project manager to review, because as Rob stated, the construction changes so rapidly that it's hard for us to know what the conditions are at that point in time. So we do a lot of coordination with the project manager. Again, we have been really striving to improve in some of the things that you have talked about, some of the challenges we've noticed. And throughout the years, we progressively have made improvements to really push back with the barricade companies. Instead of giving us a typical plan or a typical setup, we really push back and ask for plans that are reflecting that scope of work and the area that they're going to be working in.
Thank you, Gloria. I'm going to jump in just with a couple clarifying questions, and then we'll probably need to wrap this discussion up for now, just because we have a few other agenda items that I want to get to. So in like an emergent situation, or a situation like that Rob, indicated, where kind of conditions change hour by hour, or access would change hour by hour, like an accessible route isn't necessarily possible, like on a semi-permanent basis. Does the contract or do contracts or kind of guidance from the city dictate that contractors, issue notices like not accessible, please use, X alternative route to try to get to an accessible, path, otherwise, kind of like they would do for, like drivers. Is that part of, a consideration?
Sorry. I wasn't sure if Chen was going to say something. The answer to that question is yes. With the caveat that immediately when they go out to start responding to it, all they're looking to do is to protect the public in general. So when they shut something off, that's all they do. And they shut it off. And then as they, I guess you would say, get the initial kind of assessment and fix started, that's when they bring in the barricade company and say, okay, we need more information down there. We need to, and that's the city responds with, we need to put out a press release that this is an issue, that this closure is going to occur. That is the process that is supposed to follow. Sometimes the emergency is an hour long period and then it's over. And right. I think they just get into fixing it and then getting out of there, without, because the MUTCD also has stipulations on length of time that something's going to be affected.
Mm-hmm.
But it still needs notification to people. And it doesn't help you if it doesn't, it doesn't help anybody using that access route if it doesn't give them an alternative or explain that it might be a time period thing. So I think they found that out, or I know that this was something that occurred recently on Grant and Saguaro, east of Craycroft, when they had a sinkhole appear right in the middle of a lane, but also right in the middle of the Hawk crosswalks. It was in the crosswalk, and they had to shut the Hawk down, and it became an issue because there is no other Hawk. You either have to go back to Craycroft, or you have to go all the way down to Wilmot. So the notification, even with the notification there, it doesn't necessarily, provide the ability to easily get around or get through something. Luckily on that one, that was in the road, and it affected the crossing, which I say luckily in that the sidewalks were still open on either side, but you couldn't get across, which then forced you to go a half mile either back or a half mile in a different direction and then to route around, which takes you well out of where you wanted to be, which I understand.
Right. Jen, you had your hand up.
Just quickly on that question, I think that's actually an area that is a challenge and would love to hear thoughts and ideas on what you've seen that has worked well or because when you say notification, I feel like there's multiple points of communication that could be happening, which includes, bus stops. Right. There's impacts to people's bus stops and how they get to that and how are they notified of those changes such that they can have time to figure out an alternate. Are we closing off actual access totally to that bus stop, that service? Are they needing to is there a detour, another place they need to go to? Those are things we'd like to I value talking about those things to see if we can do better in our early planning processes. Communication can also include, just where placement of those A-frame signs are so that you have advance notice and it's not, you've walked all the way down one side of a street only to find out that the, place you need to cross is closed and you have to go all the way back and cross at another intersection. And then also, is there notice that's put out through a letter, through something to nearby residents? We do try a number of different things. Everybody's bombarded on all sides, and we struggle with that. So thoughts you have on those elements would be very welcome.
I mean, other members of the commission are willing, welcome to jump in here. But my personal thought is giving people at least a block or two notice, before, they reach something to know that it's going to be cut off so they can at least make a plan whether they want to try to go back where they came from and, that's walking versus bus stops, maybe bus stop or two notice before then, a bus stop. But, I feel cause our blocks are are long. So having that much notice, would hopefully prevent a ton of extra, walking, rolling, or using their battery, too, if they're low on, battery, the user. And then I think my other two questions, I might just email you with some clarifying things if that's okay. Just cause I don't want to take up more time.
Absolutely. Recognize that. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Unless anyone else on the commission has any super kind of important things they need to say on this topic, we're going to move on. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Gloria. I'm sure I'm forgetting it. Thank you, Lydia, for joining us. And thank you, Stephanie Ramirez, for joining us as well. Appreciate you, your time. Okay. So, I'm going to open up the agenda back up. So we're going to, I had this for 15 minutes, but that would take, too much time. So what I would like to do is, move the RTA next discussion and discuss that for about 10 minutes. And then we're going to go to agenda item number 6, and we might skip announcements, for today, depending on if there is any time left, just to respect our 5 p.m. deadline. So the RTA next is kind of, you know, as you all know, like there's a sales tax in Pima County that pays for road and pedestrian, and transportation related, expenses, funding projects, and that type of thing. So, RTA Next is the next iteration of that. It doesn't raise sales tax. It just means that, you know, sales tax will be maintained at the same level for, I believe, the next 20 years for that specific frame of mind. So at this point, the city council has agreed to put it on the ballot, and other municipalities in the city council agreed with other municipalities to put it on the ballot for all Pima County residents. The reason I'm bringing that up is because the Complete Streets Coordinating Council, of which I sit on for Cody, had a presentation that was brief by some folks involved with RTA Next. Complete Streets is considering writing a letter of cautious support for the sales tax. I think there is some, you know, some hesitancy or some apprehension of like, among Complete Streets folks, on the council, you know, about like the fact that, you know, RTA Next might prioritize roadway construction versus pedestrian infrastructure as much. It might, you know, but it also has to balance, you know, things for people in all of Pima County, including Ajo, including Sarita, like lots of different communities. My thing is, Complete Streets asked, people to go back to their constituencies and get their thoughts on RTA Next. And if we had, you know, as a, you know, body of disabled people, if we had, you know, issues in or things that we wanted to include in a letter, you know, noting things. I think, you know, based on kind of the information provided, that RTA Next provided, I mean, it could increase, funding for, paratransit, and there would be some ADA improvements. Like, I'll be honest, I asked the question of like, what, you know, a little bit more specifically on what ADA improvements would look like or how many projects and what increase in paratransit funding would mean. And I wasn't given like a great amount of detail. So I was just wanting to take feedback if you all had anything that I could bring to the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. So, and I'm happy to answer questions to the degree I can, you know, have knowledge. So.
Commissioner Bogan?
Yeah. Hi, Lily.
Hi. If the RTA Next is going to help fund programs like Right Choice, I'm all for it. If they can give more details of how it's going to fund ADA paratransit, with the program Right Choice being in the talks for a long time now, I think that's definitely a plus for the disability community.
Yeah, like RTA Next might provide municipalities some ability to do rider choice, but it would be up to each individual municipal provider or county provider of paratransit to do that. So like Tucson could make a choice to provide rider choice, but then the county, you know, would, might make a different choice or might have different stipulations. You know, I think that would be kind of like RTA is just a funding mechanism, and then the negotiation of how, you know, how paratransit services are increased, you know, could look different. But I would hope that there would be coordination between like the city and the county to provide, you know, a more consistent service, for something like rider choice. But, you know, I think that's something we could advocate about if that seems like a thing that's going to happen. So. Other comments, questions, thoughts? Okay. Well, if you all do have questions or thoughts, you know, feel free to email me. I think Complete Streets will meet in early December next, and that's probably when the letter will be drafted or starting to be drafted. So, yeah, I think this is kind of our best, you know, best funding option for transit, right? Transit and pedestrian and roadway construction right now, because if the sales tax goes away, there's not really any other mechanism, you know, that's being proposed right now, and federal and state dollars are, you know, not as robust as they have been in the past. Yeah, just email me. Next item on the agenda is we have a couple of members thus far, who will be their this will be their last meeting, as they are either terming off of, CODI or leaving CODI. So I would, you know, I would like to recognize Wesley Derbyshire and, his contribution, you know, with very, very key questions and, you know, trying to make, you know, the city accountable, and, you know, getting answers. I appreciate you, Wesley. Lily, I also, Lily Bogan will also be terming off. Lily's been on, you know, CODI since before I have been on, I think. And, you know, your experience, and, you know, ways to hold it down, kind of just being a consistent presence and asking questions and giving, you know, your experience, especially on transportation issues, you know, has been most welcome to me. You know, if any other members of CODI have anything to contribute, but I, you know, I would love to, you know, give, Lily and Wesley the floor for just a moment to, you know, express anything they want to express. So.
I'm already unmuted, so I'll go ahead and speak first. I want to thank CODI, the city clerk's office, Zach, and everyone on the commission. I enjoyed being on the commission and serving the city, and hope that you all can recommend people to cover the vacancies that Ward 2 and Ward 6 will now have. And Wesley, do you want to talk now?
Oh, sure. Also, thank you, Zach, and everybody else on the committee. It's been, you know, a great pleasure serving, and I always enjoyed digging in to the questions. So thank you for allowing me to participate.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for thank you to both of you for your contribution to our community, you know, both our disability community and our, you know, our city community as well. I really appreciate both of you and your service. Yeah. So that leads to our last agenda item, which we do have a little bit of time for. That is announcements. Does anyone have any announcements, of happenings going on for the disability community in the next month or so?
We know about one big one. Zach, I think you're involved with it.
I know, but I was holding the floor for other people. Yeah.
That's the only one I'll share about. I want you to share about it, though.
Okay. Well, I can do that. So, y'all, Disability Pride Day Tucson is on Saturday, December 6th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Donna Liggins Recreation Center. I don't have the exact address, but it's off Speedway and 6th. And we should have performers, of which Wesley is one. We will also have live art making, disabled sports, sensory, like a sensory-friendly environment, which Commissioner Kate Elliott is helping with, along with many other organizing things. I don't want to be like, Kate's not, Kate's doing a lot of other things too. So appreciate you, Kate. And it should just be a lot of fun. Welcome, come out. It should be all ages, friendly, and we should have, food, for sale provided by, the United States Cerebral Palsy, a food truck program. So all good there. I'm very excited about that.
What were the hours again, Zach?
11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay.
Recreation stuff will run kind of throughout the day, and performance will run from 11:30 to 12 and then 2 to 4. And we have some advocacy activities, and then art making and art displays will run kind of throughout the day as well. So,
is that at Udall Park again?
No, Lily. It's at Donald Liggins Recreation Center, which is on, it's on 6th Avenue, just off of Speedway Boulevard. It's kind of more on the west side of town.
Okay.
That's we'd love to have you. Yeah. All right.
I'm definitely going, but I do have an announcement too.
Sure.
I'll be riding the El Torde Tucson this Saturday with SAS, Southern Arizona Adaptive Sports. They are still raising money to fund their program. We have two generous donors who will be matching dollar for dollar. So whatever for each dollar, we have two matchers, so we'll get three. So they're trying to raise $25,000, and I think we're close, but if anyone's willing to donate, it's Southern Arizona Adaptive Sports.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Lily, and good luck. That's a big race. Yeah, it should be fun. Awesome. Any other announcements from any other folks?
Hey, Zach?
Yeah.
I just looked it up real quick just in case anyone wanted to write down the address for the Donna Liggins. It's 2160 North 6th Ave.
Oh, thank you, Renee. I really appreciate that. Yeah, 2160 North 6th Ave. Yeah. Awesome. Well, okay. Not seeing any other announcements and getting close to our time. I'm going to call this meeting adjourned. It's 4:57 p.m. So, yeah. Thanks, thanks everyone, and thank you to our presenters who are still on the line. Really appreciate your time and dedication to our city.
Thank you, Zach.
Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah. Thank you. You guys have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you, everyone. Be safe.
Bye.